May God be gracious to us and bless us, and make God's face to shine upon us, that your way may be known upon earth, your saving power among all nations. Let the people praise you, O God. Let all the peoples praise you. Let the nations be glad and sing for joy, for you judge the peoples with equity and guide the nations upon earth. Let the peoples praise you, O God. Let all the peoples praise you. The earth has yielded its increase. God, our God, has blessed us. May God continue to bless us. Let all the ends of the earth revere God.
This reading is from the book of Colossians, chapter 3, verses 12 through 16. As God's chosen ones, holy and beloved, clothe yourselves with compassion, kindness, humility, meekness, and patience. Bear with one another, and if anyone has a complaint against another, forgive each other, just as the God has forgiven you, so you must also forgive. Above all, clothe yourselves with love, which binds everything together in perfect harmony. And let the peace of Christ rule in your hearts, to which indeed you were called in the one body. And be thankful. Let the word of Christ dwell in you richly. Teach and admonish one another in all wisdom, and with gratitude in your hearts, sing psalms, hymns, and spiritual songs to God.
Bridget? Kirsten can tell you that our son Micah, in the first months of his life, had many gifts. One of those gifts, though, was not the gift of sound sleep. It seemed, whether it was an internal cough or an external disturbance in the force, whatever it was would easily wake him up and wake him up from the sound sleep and take him away from any sense of soundness whatsoever. And so many a nights, we had this really wonderful sling that we could put around my shoulder, and we could drop Micah into that sling, and I could get up in the middle of the night with Micah, and I could take him and put him in that sling so as to allow Kirsten to get a little bit of sleep away from his wakefulness. And normally, when I put him into that sling all cuddled and swaddled next to his dad, it would be enough to quiet him down, but not enough to put him to sleep. We happened to have a digital piano keyboard that was right in front of our living room window. And so I would often, with Micah in my sling, would sit down at that keyboard and I would begin to play songs. Music from Les Mis played horribly, but it didn't seem to bother Micah. Unchained Melody, one of Kirsten's and my favorite songs. Oh, my love, my darling. All of Me, as sung by Willie Nelson and interpreted by a croaking pastor. The music, though poorly played, seemed to work its magic oftentimes, and Micah would go from quiet to sleep there in that sling. But Micah, encased in that sling, couldn't see what else was happening. Because from that living room window, we had a direct view to Mount Wai'ali'ali, right in front of us on the island of Kauai. And in the evening times, despite the fact that that mountain is the wettest spot on the face of the earth, in the evening times, oftentimes Mount Wai'ali'ali would be clear. And when it was stunning. And there were just those few evenings when a full moon had risen above that magical and mystical mountain. And in that moment, if you asked me to tell you a moment of perfect harmony with my son in the sling, music playing, Mount Wai'ali'ali under a moonlit night, those would be moments I would tell you were perfect harmony. Paul says, in the words that Bridget just read to us, above all, clothe yourselves in love, which binds everything together in perfect harmony. My son cuddled up against me, the Creator's love on full display in front of me, a wondrous weave of elements working towards perfect harmony. Absolutely, but I am not sure if that harmony is met without the music being played as well, poorly played as it was. For Paul goes on to say, let the word of Christ dwell within you richly, and with gratitude in your heart sing psalms, hymns, and spiritual songs to God. those notes coming off the keyboard, the beauty of my heart being translated into my fingers, matching the song of the creation on full display in front of me, all of that set in place, that the soothe that my cuddling and swaddling had begun, pulling together the beauty that was outside and that which was inside our hearts. What a strange and mysterious gift this gift of music is that we celebrate this day. Beethoven said, music is the mediator between the spiritual and the sensual life. J.R. Tolkien, in his book, The Silmarillion, in which he tells the story of the world that is being created, the world that eventually becomes Middle Earth, that The Hobbit and The Lord of the Rings trilogy is all about, tells the story that in that time before Middle Earth, at the time before there is a world, the divine presence gives music and chant to heavenly attendants who are given this gift, and they literally, through their song and their chant, vibrate the world into existence. It's not all that unlike the Hindu understanding of the word Om. That word Om that is used in meditation and chanting is the primordial sound of creation. It is the original vibration of the universe from that very first vibration, that very first song of Om. All other vibrations, all other things are able to manifest. Frank Fitzpatrick, a researcher on music and spirituality, says, I know of no other medium that can transport us as immediately on all levels of our existence beyond the limits of intellect and physical body to a higher, often blissful and inexplicable state. We all know what he's talking about. Each of us knows that music can transport us to another place and another time. We each have songs that will do that. When we sing the song we sang this morning, How Can I Keep From Singing? I am immediately transported to the fall of 1984, morning chapel at Marquand Chapel at Yale Divinity School, sitting next to my friend Kristen Leslie as I hear that song being sung for the very first time and falling in love with it. When we sing it here, I am in Marquand Chapel in New Haven oftentimes. If we sing the song Joyful, Joyful, We Adore Thee, I am immediately transported to 1988, September 3rd, Christchurch, Southeast Washington, D.C., when Kirsten and I were wed, and this was the song that we asked the congregation to sing in the midst of our wedding. When we sing that song, I am intentional every time we sing that song to look at my wife and to remind the two of us of those vows that we took those years before. It immediately transports me. And oftentimes it's not just transportation to another time and a space, a triggering of memory, but to a wholly different plane where our very spirit connects to that great spirit, where our heart connects to the heart of the universe. About 4 weeks ago, many of us who are here were in attendance on a Wednesday evening when we had the gift of having the Navai Chorale singing here, and it was one of those moments of transportation. The Navai Chorale, Chris, if you could throw up that first slide, the Navai Chorale put on an amazing concert, and part of it was, if you see there in the middle, Eric Whitaker's The Sacred Veil. If you ever have a chance to hear this performed again, it is a stunning piece. It is a stunning piece in which Eric Whitaker, the composer, takes the poetry of Charles Anthony Villestri and takes that poetry and interprets it to music. The poetry itself is stunning. It takes us on a journey of love. Let's show the next slide. This is the very first song, very first piece of poetry that was accompanied by music. The veil opens in this journey of love. Wherever there is a birth or a death, the sacred veil between the worlds grows thin and opens slightly up, just long enough for love to slip silent either in or out of this, our fragile, fleeting world. And it begins that way with music that is stunning, but it goes on to tell the story of a love that is anchored in the coming together of two lives, Charles Silvestri and his wife, a girl unlikely, gently laughing by the shore. She had unlocked his heart and let his spirit soar. And on that golden, hopeful day, the boy was bold enough to say, "Come, hold my deepest secrets here amongst the foam. You are the world to me, and you who feel like home." And yet the story goes on, because there's a love that is tested and torn by the inexplicable diagnosis of cancer. In the last trimester of their first child's gestation, followed by years of treatment and hope and expectancy and ultimately the incurability that came with the final diagnosis, the waves too dark and deep to swim, he hears his love cry out to him. Her piercing anguish rising above the foam. "Please don't let go of me, for you, you are my home." From the shore he sees his bride as she fights hard against the tide. He swears a sacred vow that every loved one keeps. He steels himself, takes one last breath, and leaps. And it will be 10 years before this poet can move through the grief of his wife's passing after this agonizing journey through that cancer, before he can finally find the words that up until that point of her diagnosis had always been his companion. "Turn your silvered sail," he says. Next one, Chris. "Toward the light. Child of morning, child of night, child of iridescence, child of dreams, stars and moons will guide you down." Maybe the poetry alone was enough, because the poetry was so utterly powerful. And so often, poetry and music are utterly linked one to another. Take away the E Street Band, and you still have Bruce Springsteen, the poet. And Bruce Springsteen, the poet, is a pretty amazing poet. Combined Bruce Springsteen, the poet, with the E Street Band and his singing, and all of a sudden you have something completely different. And so it was that evening as we were gathered together. Eric Whitaker's music that accompanied didn't just produce Chicken Skin, it transported me. In those moments, I was here, sitting right about where Mike is right now, and I was only here in body in the sanctuary. My spirit had gone to another place with that music. A feeling not just the agony and the eventual hope and the resounding love of this father and husband, but feeling the losses and fears of my own life at that time. And even more, in that moment, I could feel the agony an anguish universally felt, whether it be from conflicts that rage, couples and families and communities torn asunder, the unpredictability of accident and disease, but also in the power of that music, also the hopefulness that the veil that separates us from life and death, that veil that separates us from the next life and ecstasy, is a veil that is bathed in love and hope and joy. And on that day, yes, I was sitting where Mike is, and yes, my tears were flowing, but my very soul by that music was transported, peering through that veil. And so we tried to peer through that veil every now and then. Just a few days ago, when we had the Four Petals of Peace service here at Church of the Crossroads with our friends from the Newman Center and from the Hompahonganji Temple on Nu'uanu and from the Friends Quaker Society, and we were gathered together online, we began that service with a video of a traditional Ukrainian folk song, and that video begins with a single violin player playing the song. But he's not playing the song from a studio. He's not playing the song from his home. He is playing the song from a bomb shelter because his country is under attack. And after a number of measures, he has joined a virtual orchestra, something that we've begun to see for the last 2 years living through a pandemic, come alive on our screen. A virtual orchestra begins to form, first of other Ukrainian people playing from their shelters, trying to pull together song, but then eventually 94 other violinists from 29 other countries sharing with us that gift of music. Amidst the trials and tribulations that do define our days, wars, rumors of wars, systemic violence on all aspects of God's creation, music still finds its way to be that touchstone we so desperately need, wherein hope, possibility, and love and peace are found. Such is the gift of music. If love is that which binds all things together in perfect harmony, as Paul says to the church at Colossae, then music is often how those very threads in which the garment of love is woven and then connected to the very source of love. And so today, despite technological hiccups, despite COVID raising its head and everything else, we honor the music of our shared lives and the music makers amongst us. I want to invite our chief music maker, Chris, to come forward for a moment.
So I have to admit that last night, around about 9 o'clock, I was writing out what I was going to say. And as you all know, I've heard this morning that my computer decided to die. And along with it went my little speech. So bear with me. So it was about a little over 2 years ago when I was in the classroom of Alawite Elementary, and I got a text message. I got a text message from Ben Fairfield, and he said, "Hey, there is a position open for an interim choir director. It's just for 2 months. It's kind of an emergency. We need someone to come in." I said, "Oh, okay." Immediately, my thought was, no, absolutely not, because my own history with the capital C church wasn't really the greatest, and I was kind of pushing away from it. But in my head, I'm going, you know, this is a time where I can, you know, try to improve on my own skills as a musician. So, though I had, you know, worked with previous ensembles in the past and such, this would be my first official choir that I got to work with. It reminds me of the first rehearsal, actually. That first rehearsal I came in, I was so nervous and sweating and chills going up my spine, and I had a mosquito right here on my arm. No idea that it was there, and then I just slapped it real quick, and I was like, that's really itchy. And Liz Nelson is the very first person to walk up to me, pulls out a little bottle of eucalyptus oil, and dabs a little bit on it, rubs it in, and says, "That should make you feel better," and walks back. And my thought was, okay, this was odd, but I went home thinking, wow, someone really, I hardly know this person, and the amount of care that I immediately picked up from this choir is immense and just absolutely astounding. The first service that was here, that was when the news was going around about the novel coronavirus. And I was thinking, oh, it'll go away, or it'll just go away. Nope. Here we are today. God had different plans in mind. So, and originally, I was only supposed to be here for 2 months. And here it is, 2 years. So, I remember when we first got the news that we were shutting down, Kahu David, myself, Richard Tillotson, Renita, Marcus, and a few others, we got together and tried to figure out what can we do to make a service happen in a virtual space. How can we keep singing and keep music alive within our services? And the first thought was Jennifer and I would come here into the sanctuary and try to do this through a microphone. And that did not quite work at first. And at the time, Zoom was very new in its beginning stages of trying to develop its softwares and such. So that didn't work. And so we moved on to try a recording. And now this was at the time when Easter Sunday was coming up, and the choir had been working on Let There Be Peace, and it's this lovely arrangement. And I was thinking, well, I want us to be able to incorporate the choir in some way, but how are we going to do that? How are we going to have a choir sing in an unsingable world? And so it wasn't the first, I'm not the first person to think of this virtual choir. In fact, the first person to think of a virtual choir was Eric Whitaker back in 2008 or earlier. I can't remember quite when, but the first initial virtual choir included 183 singers from around the world. Most recently, because of the pandemic, another virtual choir was created by Eric Whitaker that included 17,572 people. Oh my goodness. In my head, that's going, oh, that's a lot of editing. So I was thinking, maybe we can do something like that for Crossroads and to make this happen for them so that they can share their music with all of you and with the community. And to say that this choir has the determination to just be headstrong and learn something new, to get up over the learning curve and produce something so beautiful at the moment. And I am so thankful. And it just gave me chills the first time I pressed play on that recording, and my heart just wanted to sink. So now the idea was, how do we go on from this? How do we keep singing in this church when we're all in our virtual space? So about September rolls around of 2020, and we're starting to get into the season of Advent, and I had the idea, well, maybe not a visual virtual choir, but how about a non-visual virtual choir? That should be something that's much easier, much more efficient, much more healthy for myself, for the choir, so that it's not something that's too taxing. And it worked, as you may know. We produced about two to three hymns every week. So to this day, congratulations, you have created over 200 recordings, 237 recordings just by this choir. And I think about this, and a lot of people within the music community have asked, you know, how did you do this, and how were you able to make your choir sing throughout? Is it just, oh, maybe you have like four or five worship leaders? Do you have like one dedicated singer? I said, no, the choir sings. They say, how do they sing when they're all socially distanced? I said, oh, we do virtual choirs every week. And their faces just go. And they're saying, that's a lot of work. I said, not if you think about it. We've gotten it to a process where every single week I send out a recording for them to go along with, to practice with, and they submit it to me on Saturday night, and then it's to the point where I could just get it and make it within 30 minutes. And it's a set in stone pattern that I do every week. But I cannot make it happen without the choir. And it's because of this choir, they have created such wonderful recordings, have made such an impact in our community, so much so that we have been able to enshrine folks who have passed on. For example, Marita Nelson. I have, I believe, 17 recordings of her voice that will forever be in these in this sanctuary. And that's an amazing thing, you know. So from that, on top of that, it's not just the choir that's here, it's also the choir that has gone on to be in other places. And so other virtual choirs we have done, it has included folks that are from Sky Island, it's included folks in Italy, it's included folks in New Jersey, and all throughout the United States and all throughout the world. And this would not have been possible. So in a way, this choir basically spat in the face of the pandemic and said, you're not going to keep us from singing. And I am so thankful for that, because without them, I wouldn't be able to be here. I wouldn't be able to do what I love the most, and that's make music with these people. And I think about all the functions that go behind it. I think of the music committee, Val, Linda, and Lee, who have helped be my brain behind a lot of the music selections. I think about the people within the choir that are visitors to the choir. For example, Sora Yoon. I think of Parker Nakamura, Casey Chung, and Tiffany Nakayama. I think of new members that are in this choir, like Tim Majeski. And I think of people who have been in this choir for a long haul, no matter what, like Robbie, like Richard, like Jim, like Eldon. And I think of people who have helped accompany this choir, like Don, like Lena, like Jennifer. And I think of others who just bring life to this choir, like Annie. Such life that you give us every time you show up, and I love it. And there's so many more in this choir that I cannot express my gratitude enough to them for the love that they show, for the determination that they show, for their kuleana, for their aloha for everyone. So this Sunday, I like to recognize all of them and give them the proper acknowledgement that they all deserve for everything they have done these past 2 years. So, mahalo, aloha.